What's up, folks? Welcome to the Whoop Podcast. I'm your host, Will Ahmed, the founder and CEO of Whoop, and we are on a mission to unlock human performance. That's right. As you all know, we build wearable technology that helps better understand the human body. We measure sleep, recovery, strain. More recently, we've been focusing on respiratory rate, which we've found can be a powerful predictor during COVID-19. If you'd like to get a Whoop membership, you can sign up for 15% off using the discount code WILLAHMED. That's WILLAHMED. I'm going to get to our guest in half a second, but I just wanted to call out some amazing things that have been going on in the Whoop universe. First of all, I found out that George W. Bush, Mr. President, is a Whoop member. That photo was sent to me by a countless number of Whoop members, which I always appreciate. Mr. President, it is an honor to have you on Whoop. We are grateful to have you using our technology. And I don't know if this will make its way to you. Probably not. But if there's anything I can do for you, I am here and ready. In case you missed it, we just announced a partnership with the NFL Players Association to put Whoop on every NFL player as they go back to work this season. Patrick Mahomes was the face of that announcement. It's very cool to have Patrick on Whoop as well. And the NFLPA did a lot of research, frankly, on respiratory rate, on continuous health monitoring, and really trying to figure out what are some of the best protocols that they can adopt to make sure NFL players can go back to work safely. That brings me to my guest, Kelvin Beachum. Arizona Cardinals left tackle. Kelvin's someone I've known for years. He's an amazing guy. We actually recorded this podcast together earlier this year, so pre-COVID-19. This was actually at the NBA All-Star game. Kelvin and I sat down. And here's a guy, by the way, who went from being the seventh round draft pick with no guarantees to really establishing himself as a starter in the league. He's also a prolific angel investor in technology companies. And we talk a lot about how he uses visualization to help him achieve his goals, what he's learned about how to succeed in his career and his life, why he's always thinking about life after football. We go through a day in the life of an NFL player. We even talk about sex and how he views sex as a performance enhancement, which I thought was quite interesting. Kelvin's a very thoughtful athlete, and we're proud to have him on the team. So without further ado, here is Kelvin Beachum. Kelvin, welcome to the Whoop Podcast.
Happy to be here, brother. Long time coming.
We got to know each other a few years ago because you became an angel investor in Whoop. Mm-hmm. You've made a bunch of interesting investments across technology. We're going to talk a little bit about that. I wanted to start, though, by just asking you, did you always know you were going to be a professional football player?
To be honest with you, man, the goal was to be a professional basketball player. I loved basketball. I still love basketball. But it came to a point in time where I had an AAU coach. I played AAU ball during the summer, and he was like, Kelvin, there are more scholarships for people on a football field than there are on a basketball court. It's 5 people that play. It's 22 people that play on a football field. I think you may have a better shot at getting a scholarship. It wasn't even so much about being a pro, just shit, but you have a better shot. This is in high school. You have a better shot at being a scholarship athlete if you go the football route. And took his advice, started playing football. It wasn't so much started playing football. It was already planned, but started taking it more serious.
Right.
Started really researching what you know, an offensive lineman looked like, what I needed to do to be successful, what I needed to live to be successful, etc.
How big were you in high school?
Oh, man.
So I'm looking at a stat line right now that says you're listed as 6'3", 308 pounds. We'll come back to your weight.
For sure. I think when I was playing high school football on varsity, I may have been like 230, 240.
Okay. So that's still big for high school.
It was. Yeah. I was a, you know, tall, slender. I mean, I try to get back to that size from time to time. I want to say like 230, 240. Went into college, I want to say like 245, 250. And compared to, you know, high school ranks, that's a big person. When I got into the college ranks, that was considered small.
And over the course of the next 4 years, were you able to put on all of that weight?
Put on a massive amount of weight in a short amount of time.
What were some of the techniques that you used to put on that kind of weight?
So, you know, when colleges, especially, you know, D1 colleges, everything is about performance. So, you know, at that point in time, they were having protein shakes right after the workout. You have a protein bar first thing in the morning. It got to the point where I was probably going through a loaf of bread a day.
Oh, wow.
With sandwiches and peanut butter and jelly, because for me, it was hard for me to put on weight and then keep it on. Had a very, very high metabolism. And even when I got into the league, I would say until I got hurt, it was very hard for me to keep the weight on, want to eat, get tired of eating, because it was always about eating to try to stay up to where I was supposed to be. So put on about, I would say, 60 pounds from the time I got to college until my senior year when I was like 320, which was a little too big.
Yeah.
Got back down to kind of flirting around like the 300 range. I think I got drafted at like 303. And then from then, I really tried to keep it, you know, below 300.
Now, I imagine your weight is a very important theme for your career. Like, how closely are you managing that? Is that something you're looking at every day, every week?
You know, during the season, it's an everyday thing. During the off season, especially early parts of the off season, it's not really a big thing. It's more about how do I feel and what am I eating? And I can tell, for me, it's like I've gotten, you kind of get to know your body really, really well, where you know exactly when you're heavy and exactly when you're light. You know, the diet and the way that I eat becomes paramount, especially during the off season. Because the thing is, even though I'm working out, I'm nowhere close to burning the amount of calories that I would burn during
in season
practice on a Wednesday, on a game day on Sunday. So for me, it's the meals are a lot smaller during the off season, but it's a lot of meals.
You're eating a lot of food. That's mm-hmm. the bottom line. And what are you doing for workouts?
Everything is about getting back into some of the fundamentals of your craft. For us, for me as a left tackle, my posture, my stance, the depth in my stance, the feelings of different muscles and the way that they're supposed to contract in the right ways during this point in time, my glutes, my abductors, making sure that my abductors are turned on. But this year, they actually kind of pick things up a little bit, and it's more movement than it would be static, because we do a lot of static and a lot of posture work early on in the offseason, plyos, jumping. It's like a glute blaster before we even start the workout. Like, we walk about, you know, three or four blocks with what they call them slingshots that go around your knees. And then we come into the weight room and we'll do all types of glute work. And then we do 81 squats. That's like 81 squats in different variations of your feet. So your feet pointed straight, pointed out, pointed in, stagger, big stagger, short stagger.
And the thinking there is you want to build strength no matter what position your feet are in?
Well, it's really building strength and mobility in as many planes as possible right now.
Yeah.
So we're working through a lot of different planes. So we're going from five plyo jumping squats to a sled push to 10 kettlebell raises with resistance and a green band, and then pushing the sled back, and that's one rep, and you're doing four reps of that.
That's a lot.
And you're going right from there, and you're going right to single arm snatches. My last set was 90 pounds for one arm snatches for five.
Wow.
From there, going to doing like glute bridges, and we're getting up to like 500 for glute bridges for five.
Wow.
Right now, again, we're talking about working on different planes. The planes we're working on is like open up your hips and squat, come back, open up your hips and squat. So like, it's all these different planes that we're working through that's different than what I've been accustomed to and a number of the guys have been accustomed to in the gym. But it's really about working through different planes, having strength, mobility through different planes, and then also being able to just have that bounce that you need, you know, as a season wears on, and being able to build that stamina and build that foundation, that strong foundation right now.
If you think about the evolution of the off season into the season, is the off season where you put on strength and then the season's where you try to maintain it? Or can you actually get stronger in season?
For me, as I've gotten older, I've realized that I have to get stronger as the season progresses. For me, I consider my career, the way that I train, the way that I prepare as a crescendo to the end of the season. So it's this steady, slow crescendo towards the end of the season.
Slow build, yeah.
It's the slow build. So you're continuing to get better, stronger, more aware of your body as the season continues to grow and as the season continues. Not you train very hard, get really strong, get into training camp, you stop lifting weights, you get into the season, you just maintaining, and you just barely getting by the last quarter of the season. No, it's like I want to be getting stronger as we get into the last phase of the season and getting stronger as we get ready to go into the playoffs.
I love that. And how does Whoop fit into the equation?
Man, Whoop is everything, man. I'm not going to lie to you. And I'm not saying that because I'm on here. But for me, Whoop is what I use in every piece of my life. The sleep, the strain, the recovery. I pay attention to all of that. You know,
love it.
Even while I was on my trip, you know, my vacations, I didn't take my phone, but I made sure that my Whoop was charged up the entire time. So when I got back,
oh, that's interesting.
I was surprised. I was actually, as an investor, I'm like, I'm gonna see how this goes. I'm gonna not take my phone for 2 weeks. I'm gonna make sure that my Whoop is charged the whole time, and I'm gonna see if it backtracks.
And it does.
It did fine.
Yeah.
Every day I can go back and see what it looked like 3 weeks from now. You know, and I was able to see how. I mean, I know how my body felt. But to also understand with all the travel, with all the different time zones we jumping through, how the body performs. And for me, you know, as an athlete sometimes, you almost get to experiment with yourself sometimes.
Totally.
You see what works, what doesn't work, how far you can push your body, how much you need to pull back. And you're able to really have a qualitative and quantitative view on that with Whoop.
Yeah, the self-experimentation piece is something that's been fascinating for me to see how athletes like yourself use Whoop. What are some examples of things that you've introduced to your lifestyle that you found have improved your sleep or your recovery, for example?
You know, for me, just taking the phone out of the room, out of my bedroom completely.
Totally. Yeah.
Like, I don't even bring my phone into the bedroom. And, you know, if you look at the inputs that you have on your phone, it's, hey, I mean, on your the Whoop app, is the surveys. Hey, were you on your phone before you went to bed? Did you read before you went to bed? Did you have caffeine? Did you share the bed, you know, with a partner? Yeah, I used to have another piece of survey after you took that off a couple of years ago.
Sex.
Yeah, the whole night. I mean, that's a very, very powerful tool that,
it's interesting, frankly.
It's funny. I will tell my wife. I'm like, look, I was in the green. You know, we did last night.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And I've had my best sleep, you know.
Totally. Well, it's a very important theme for athletes and performance.
Very
and for
important.
Years, there was this whole concept from boxers that you shouldn't have sex for a certain number of days. It sounds like you think that's bunk.
Man, I've had some of my best workouts from making love in the morning before I work out.
Really?
I kid you not.
Interesting.
Because the thing is like, I think it's almost priming your body for strain, you know? Like, you just had a exercise, in essence.
Yeah. This is a funny story. So I've got a friend who works in the, you know, like the fighting industry. Mm-hmm. And there's a UFC fighter who's literally having sex 5 minutes before he goes out into the octagon. Like, you know, he's with his wife in the locker room having sex right before they go out. But it's fascinating that that's what it takes for him to have an optimal performance.
Yes. Yes, I mean, I've had the best sleep of my life, and I've had my biggest gains have come on the eve or the morning of making love to my wife and then going working out or going to go playing a football game.
That's fascinating. So any supplements in your life? You take anything before bed?
For me, tea. That's like right tea. Now.
The chamomile tea
chamomile. Chamomile, because, I mean, it's not caffeinated. To make sure it's not caffeinated. But that's the closest thing to any type of supplementation that I take before bed. I try to stay away from a lot of supplementation during the off season because we're on so much medication during the season. So I want to allow my body to rest.
What kind of stuff are you on in the season?
All types of anti-inflammatories, man.
Right.
Endocin, Celebrex, Toradol. Have had to take painkillers from time to time, you know, with muscle relaxers, you know, had a back issue. So it's times I've had to take a lot of medication just to get through the season or as the season, you know, wanes on, you get into the last, you know, six games of the season where your body is just banged up. So for me, I try to take
dial it back,
take a step back. You know, you take fish oils and you take magnesium. All these different vitamins, it taxes your kidneys, especially even if you're drinking a ton of water, it still taxes your kidneys. So the thing is like, once the season is over, I go cold turkey. If I had any type of medication that was left over, I flush it down the toilet. If my wife finds anything, like, I mean,
that's smart, man. That stuff's addictive too, right?
It's, I mean, you know, that's a whole nother conversation, but like, I think that you know, you can be addicted to what you want to be addicted to. I think everything is a choice, and it's your choice, you know. And if I wanted to keep taking painkillers during the off season just to say I was taking painkillers, I could. But I know that that's not the best thing for me. It's not the best thing for my family. And it's not the best thing for my body from a performance
standpoint. I mean, you've got a very healthy attitude. I remember reading about, like, Brett Favre saying he used to take, like, 14 Vicodins before going to the ESPYs or something. And it just showed how completely off the rails it can get.
It can get. It can get. And the thing is I've been – it's been moments in my career, I would say, when I was in Jacksonville where I was coming off with a knee issue where I would take a painkiller right before I went to bed because I knew
– yeah.
I know I'm hurting. I know this is going to, you know, help me sleep really well. So it's, you see how things can really get really, really bad, really, really fast. And you think about how our NFL and how the game of football has evolved 10, 15, 30 years ago, how it's evolved to where it is now. The way that doctors prescribe medication is just different. Like, even to get painkillers, they got to have a third party doctor come in and evaluate why you're taking these painkillers. So
you feel like there actually is a fair amount of regulation around you needing a painkiller?
Because
I think the perception from the outside is, okay, if these guys need any type of drug, they'll have access to it.
We do, but it's a ton of regulation around it. Like, it's not only state regulation, it's federal regulation. And the thing is it's gotten to the point. So for instance, Toradol is what you get it's an anti-inflammatory that you get before the game. We've gotten to a point, it used to be a time where you can get your Toradol whenever you got to the stadium, in whatever city you played in, when I first got into the league.
Wow.
Now it's come to the point where they give you a Toradol in a prescription bottle, you know, for, you know, you taking Toradol for the next four games. They give you that prescription bottle for four weeks ago, and you have to ration out that you're going to take one on Sunday, another the next Sunday, etc. And then you have to come back to them to get another four pills for the next four games. So it's very, very regulated, and you can only get it in New Jersey. So for me, I played with the Jets.
Yeah.
I can only get it in New Jersey. So if I forgot my Toradol and we went and played in Boston, or we went and played in Miami, or we went and played in Buffalo, they wouldn't give me another Toradol because it was only prescribed.
You're telling me there's no way you'd be able to get it.
They will find a way to get it to you, but
that's my point.
They will find a way, but they're trying to get to a point where they're trying to get that out of the game.
Okay, all right. So
it sounds like
more of a conscious effort.
They're making a very, very conscious.
You feel like the concussion protocol stuff's been good?
I think it's been a mixed bag. Honestly, it's a very slippery slope. It can go in a lot of different directions. Honestly, but it's one of those things where so much happened years ago where you're still feeling the ramifications of the lawsuit that happened. You're feeling the ramifications of Junior Seau. You're feeling the ramifications of the guy who committed suicide in Kansas City a couple of years ago. You know, even when
you're talking about athletes that have had, you know, clear cases of CTE, clearly brought on about by concussions, brain damage. And leading to depression and all kinds of issues.
Yeah, and more times than not taking their lives.
Yeah.
You know, so those are still pretty prevalent and they're still recent. I haven't even seen the movie Concussion yet because I don't want to see it until I'm done playing football.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Because that's something that I just don't want to have to process or even have to think about at this point in time in my career.
Now, your position, probably a little less common to get concussions.
No, we're the highest.
Oh, really?
Yes, because you guys have to think about it. In the trenches,
yeah,
you're getting hit in the head in some shape, form, or fashion every single play at some point. So
yeah, right.
Practice, the game.
It's amazing.
You know, everybody sees a huge, giant hits that knock somebody out of the game. A receiver may get hit like that maybe two or three times in a game. Say a receiver doesn't catch a ball in a game. He don't get hit in the head.
Have you found that there's anything after a game that was particularly physical, whether to your head or the rest of your body, that's helped you recover? This could be mindfulness. This could be ice bath. This could be cryo. What are some of the things that work for you?
Yeah, you know, I'm one of those guys that I've done almost everything up under the sun. Huge in the acupuncture. Huge in the chiropractic. I see my chiropractor during the season, every week, every Thursday.
Wow.
During the off season, every other week, every other Thursday. I have phases where I pick my phases back up of acupuncture. So right now I'm not really doing acupuncture, but as we get back into actual football movement and I'm going against somebody, I start acupuncture, and I'll be doing acupuncture every week up until the end of the season. Ice baths, hot tub, cold tub, that's a daily routine. Like I start when we're in the season, I start my day in the hot tub, finish my day in the hot tub, cold tub every single day.
So I want to understand this. Yep. So you'll go into the hot tub.
Mm-hmm. That's it. That's what the first thing I do when I walk into the facility during the season.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so what time would that be?
5:45 in the morning.
Wow. So 5:45 in the morning. What is this, Tuesday or Wednesday?
This is Wednesday. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, same time.
Assuming you're at home that week or?
That doesn't matter.
Oh, because you travel on Friday, right?
We don't travel till Saturday.
Oh, you don't show up till Saturday.
So okay. We travel Saturday. But Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, every morning, 5:45, starting the hot tub.
How long will you be in there for?
10 to 15 minutes.
Okay.
Sitting down. You know,
and the thinking is that's going to warm your muscles up, warm your body up.
That's just getting the body ready for the day, honestly. Yeah. Getting the body ready for the day. I usually just do a workout at like 6:15, 6:20. So I do hot tub and then I go get treatment. Any kind of ailments I got going on, knock out my treatment, go get my lift in, knock out my lift, and then get ready to go get breakfast and start the actual meeting, the meeting portion of the day.
So you'll lift standpoint. Every day?
I lift every day. That's what I talk about. It's really it's a crescendo of continuing to get better and better every single week until the end of the season, not just, you know, do everything in off season, don't do anything in season. But I lift every day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Wednesday is kind of the only day it's a little lighter, but it's still some type of mobility that I go in and do in the weight room. Because Wednesday is our heaviest day from a football standpoint. We're putting in new schemes.
That makes sense, right? Because it's an equidistant from the game you played, so you've recovered. Yes. And it's, you know, the same amount of, it's a good amount of time before the next game.
Correct.
The cold tub.
Every day. Clockwork.
And every 10 minutes, 15?
Okay, I can get up to 20. So okay. I do 20 in the cold and come back in the hot tub.
But you like to end hot?
I like to end hot.
I've gotten really into contrast therapy where you go like from sauna to cold. Yeah. And just keep ping-ponging back and forth. Yeah. It also improves your mood.
From what I've heard, it does.
Now, I've interviewed some people that have said they've used their Whoop data to alter how long they'll spend in different, you know, modalities or anything like that. Say, for example, you've got, you wake up with a red recovery, which is inevitable in your business.
Yep.
Will that make you think a little differently about how long you do something for?
Not really, because during the season, I'm so regimented.
Yeah.
I do the same thing every week.
Right. With
the same person. Monday is Monday, Tuesday is Tuesday, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If I have a day, for me, sleep is like the most important thing that I look for, is what happened for me to get in the red. Did I go to bed late? What did I eat last night? For me, you know, one of the things
I imagine food could mess up your recovery a lot.
Food, yeah, but for me, also acupuncture. So I do my acupuncture. In Pittsburgh, I did it on Thursday nights. In Jacksonville, I did it on Sundays. And then New York, I would do it on Friday nights. I would say after acupuncture, my readings were always much lower than they were on nights that I didn't do acupuncture.
The day after acupuncture, lower readings?
Lower readings. I've always had lower readings after acupuncture. And I don't know if I actually felt like I slept well, but I think the treatment in itself was still working and still doing what it needed to do.
I think that's right. So then hopefully maybe the day after.
The day after you feel amazing. That's why I do it on Friday. I try to do it on Friday. So you do it on Friday.
So then you end up with the green recovery on Sundays.
Sunday, exactly.
Wow, clockwork. Brilliant. Yeah. Who are some people that have helped you think about the way that you treat your body or people you look up to?
Yeah. You know, in Pittsburgh, I had a great group of men there. I had Troy Polamalu, who just got into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I saw that.
Ryan Clark, James Harrison, who everybody knows about.
James Harrison's the notorious strongest man in the NFL. But
he takes very, very good care of his body.
I bet.
I learned a lot from James. I had an offensive lineman that taught me how to take care of my body at an early age as well.
So what are a couple of the things, you come into the league, you're a young guy, what are a couple of the things that you learn quickly from people who've been in the league for 10
sure.
years?
So Max Starks told me about acupuncture.
Great.
Willie Colon talked to me about chiropractic work. James, you know, the masseuse and the chiropractor that I now have are people that he introduced me to.
Makes sense.
Ryan Clark, Troy, James, we all use a naturopathic doctor from time to time.
And what is that?
So a naturopathic doctor uses just natural herbs of the world to help with curing injuries.
Oh, interesting.
So I've been using her for years. So vitamins.
So like the equivalent, like Tiger Balm would be under that type of umbrella, or is that even too commercial?
I think that's too commercial.
Okay.
You know, but she uses a lot of concoctions, whether it be through things, vitamins that you take, protein shakes that are grass-fed, like everything is
so more natural.
Just very, very natural. Very, very natural. But learned a lot from them and have had people that I had back in my Pittsburgh days that have followed me throughout my entire career.
That's cool.
I think those people have really allowed me to continue playing in the league more than anything, because I've seen people that I've came into the league with that are now out, people that were playing at a very, very high level a while back ago that are out of the game. Because that, if you, I feel, just my opinion, you have to have a very clear-cut regimen of people that you use to make sure your body stays intact. And it may work for some people, it may not work for some people, but for me, I've had to have those people in place week in and week out to make sure that my body is ready and capable of taking the strain and taking the load that comes along with playing this game.
Well, it was one of the insights that we had in the very earliest days of Whoop was that the way sports was going, and even the way that taking care of your body was going, is it's not just about 2 or 3 hours of the day. It's like, what are those other 20 hours of the day, and how is that affecting your recovery process? How is that affecting you? And it's powerful now to just hear how clear of a thread that is in professional sports. But if you go back 10 years ago, it wasn't even quite the same level as it is today. Now there's all these stories about the Tom Brady's and the LeBron James's of the world having these sort of weirdly long careers because they clearly have put such an emphasis on their bodies.
Your body's your temple, man.
Yeah.
You know, I had a coach in college that talked about it was certain things he would put in his temple. And, you know, he wasn't putting alcohol in his temple. He wasn't putting fried foods in his temple.
Right.
Because your body is your temple. That's all that you have. And for us as a professional, if your body isn't working, you can't go perform. If you can't go perform, you can't put food on the table.
Totally. Like,
this is your job. This is your livelihood. If your body, if you're not taking care of your livelihood, which is your body, you won't be in professional sports for a long time.
And as you think about your career right now, like, what are some of the things that you've learned over the years that have helped you be really sharp in the game, in the moment, right? Is it just that you've now gotten so used to 60,000 screaming fans and playing the game? Or have you also learned techniques, whether it's visualization, whether it's staying calm during the game, whether it's getting energized during the game? What are things that help you manage performance?
You know, I think one of them is visualization. For me, visualization is used throughout the year, thinking about what it's like on 3rd and 4 on a 40-yard line going in,
yeah,
with the game on the line. And the particular, in my case, what set am I going to use? What hand strike am I going to use? Where my eyes going to be?
Love it.
For me, those types of visualizations are happening all throughout the year at different points and times.
And will you do that literally in the morning? Will you be doing it just during a team meeting?
Like, no, this is like, happen? I mean, it'd be times, if I'm flying in,
take some time on the plane,
just thinking about it.
Right. And you'll consciously be doing it, or it just happens unconsciously?
It happens unconsciously sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, it's crazy, man. It's like I actually dream. It'd be times I'd be dreaming.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know if you've ever had this feeling, but sometimes it's almost like you're dreaming about a dream in a dream. It's like it's like layers of the dream that you're in. And it's been times that I can feel myself thinking about the dream that I want to happen during that dream. And it can be very deep for me sometimes. It's like I can feel and sense how it's going to feel. You know, for instance, you know, I love playing in Baltimore. Baltimore is a fantastic stadium. And we played them on Thursday Night Football. And it's like it's almost like deja vu because you've dreamt of being in that stadium performing
in a way. You've been there before.
You've been there before.
But that's such a powerful concept, man.
Very powerful.
And such a sign of how you've made it this far in your career. Mm-hmm. This feeling that you can visualize something so intensely that when you actually show up in the moment, it feels like it's already happened. That's a sign of world-class visualization.
It's fun though, and it's like, and it's not only just football. It's visualizing the family, it's visualizing success off the field. Now in business,
totally.
It's taking the time to. It's almost like you're creating your reality with the visualization that you're able to visualize, or the meditation that you're able to meditate on. It's being able to put something in mind's eye, put something in a dream form. And then keep dreaming about that. And then, you know, who's to say that you don't have that dream come to fruition in person? You know, I'm still dreaming about how I'm going to be feeling when confetti is raining down after I've won a Super Bowl. You know, you dream about that. You visualize that. You visualize that moment. You visualize what it's going to look like when your family is on the sideline after the Super Bowl. You visualize having, you know, your child. Like, I remember when I was a young person, a young dude, and I remember seeing like professional athletes having their kids on the podium while they were doing an interview.
Totally.
And this year, I have my son on the podium while I'm doing an interview. You know, so for me, it's visualizing and seeing what somebody did years ago. I had no idea that it, you know, you had a dream, you had something that you wanted to accomplish, but you never knew how it was going to come into fruition. And then to have my son, I'm doing a interview during training camp, you know, with the Jets presser in the background, the step and repeat in the background, the reporters in the front, and I'm holding my son while he's tapping on the mic. You know, I dreamt about that. I thought about that. I visualized that. But I never thought it would really happen. But when it happened, it was like, wow, I remember when I thought about this, you know. So I think visualization is a very, very powerful tool. It's been something that I've used for a very long time. I think, you know, you talk about performance and how do you handle being in a stadium of 60,000, 90,000. It comes to a point where it's just you and your craft. Who cares about who's screaming? Who cares about what your coach has to say? You hear the play from your quarterback. You hear the signal from your center. You hear the communication from your left guard. But at the end of the day, your mind is focused on your craft. And it gets to the point where I can care less who the defender is. I can care less who he is, what he's done, what round he was drafted in, who he was. And all I want to do is work on my craft. I want to work on my craft just like I was doing back in February, back in January, when nobody was watching, when nobody was in the gym, when I'm in Arizona and it's freaking 32 degrees in the gym because it's early mornings. And all I'm doing is worried about my craft, worried about where I'm driving from, where I'm driving to. Is my glute loaded up like I want it to be? Am I driving out my insteps of my right foot? Am I catching the force from my right foot and my left foot? Am I replicating my stance over and over? Those things are what I think about in the game. So for me, it's like this game within a game.
Totally.
If I have a pressure, if I happen to get too close to the quarterback, all right, assessing what I did, how can I make sure that I don't do that again? How can I get back to my core fundamentals and core technique is to get right back and have that next play be the best play of the game so far. So I think it's this evolution that has happened that I didn't have. I didn't think like this when I was a rookie. I didn't think like this, you know, my fourth year in the league. I think after I had my injury in 2015, it caused me to think about the game much deeper than I was. Like, I think early on in my career, I relied so much on being a good athlete, being young,
talent,
bouncing back. You know, I mean, the bounce back time when I was 24 is a lot different than the bounce back time at 30, and that's just 6 years, you know? But I look at how things were years ago and how things are now, and it's the mental aspect of the game that's really transcended, I feel, my athleticism by light years because of the visualization, the mental fortitude that's needed, the mental toughness that's needed. And I'm not talking about mental toughness as you got to be mentally tough to sit in the cold tub, but the mentally toughness that's needed to be able to grind and be willing to grind and be willing to be
day in, day out,
day in and day out, and love the mundane.
Totally. Like, that's a big, I mean, that's a really
big thing. You got to love the mundane, the most mundane task. If you love the mundane, you would be just fine.
You know, you did a really nice job there describing two separate but related phenomenons. One is this vision of where it's going to be, what the outcome's going to be, the visualization of that successful moment, the visualization of the confetti coming down, the visualization of the big play, right? You've done a great job describing how you'll focus on that. And separately, what you've done a great job describing is all the details of the moment, right? So you just describing what's the play call going to be, where are my hands going to be, what's the first step that I'm going to take, right? And so you're balancing these two things that in some ways feel actually quite far apart, the outcome being this big moment.
Correct.
And then this very sort of minute detail level. And the analogy that I have as an entrepreneur is this feeling that your eyes are in the sky, but your feet are on the ground. Mm-hmm. You know, you're dreaming, how big can this company be? How impactful can it be? How powerful of a talent stack can we have? How can we be the best company in Boston, the best company in the country? How can we build this powerful technology with, okay, I've got six follow-up emails I'm going to send today. I've then got a staff meeting with my direct reports. These are the five topics I want to cover. I've got to do this follow-up phone call. And, you know, and it's not as sexy as what that dream looks like. No. But you have to attack each and every one of those things in a very disciplined way. So,
and I would say, even to piggyback and add to that,
yeah,
I think you also fall in love with that process even more than the outcome.
I think you're right.
It's like the Super Bowl is fantastic. Like, winning the Super Bowl is great. Winning an NFL game is hard. And when you do win it, it's great. When you get on a win streak, it's great. But you start to realize and understand how much you love practice, how much you love the day-to-day, the mundane, the process. And you realize, you talk about, you know, the entrepreneur journey. You know, we have this thing in football, and we talk about be where your feet are. And you really enjoy to just embrace that moment. And whatever that moment is, you embrace that moment. When you get to the next moment, you embrace that moment. You get to the next moment, you embrace that moment. And you'd be surprised, those slight edges and small wins that are those small deposits of capital that you put into, and I'm not talking about money, but the small deposits of social currency and the discipline currency that you're putting in from a personal standpoint, that stuff starts to add up, and you're able to build something that's really, really special.
Well, there's another theme here, which is you're describing gratitude. Right. You're also highly grateful for each one of those moments and each one of those details. And I think that's a powerful in turn feedback loop that builds on itself, is because when you can get really focused on the details and then be grateful for being able to deliver on them, and then you have a picture of where you're going and what that vision is, it all just goes. It just happens. And it's amazing. You'll wake up one day, 5-10 years later, and be shocked at where you are.
Hey, this is going into 9 years in the National Football League. And you couldn't have told me it would have got me to this point.
Well, you're an amazing, you know, you're an inspiration because you were selected 7th round.
Yes, sir.
Right? It wasn't
248, baby.
Yeah, it wasn't obvious that you were going to be in the league for 9 years and a starter and making the kind of money you're making. And a lot of it, I think, goes back to your attitude and a lot of what you've just described.
I couldn't have wrote this script. Couldn't have called it like it is right now. I mean, again, you can dream it, talk about it, visualize it. But for me, actually living in the moment, being at the NBA Tech Summit as an NFL player, you know, investing in a phenomenal company in Boston, and then wearing a product and being able to talk about the product wherever I go, no matter where I'm at in the world.
Well, I'm highly appreciative of that.
But I mean,
lucky,
like,
to have you in my life, man.
True, but I would have never thought this little country boy from Ahern, Texas, would have been investing in a company called Whoop, speaking with the founder at a phenomenal,
yeah,
you know,
recording
studio here in Chicago.
That's,
you know,
true.
You couldn't have told me this, you know, in the country of Texas, man. So for me, those things and those experiences, those are things that you put the time in, but you never really know at the end of the day what the outcome is going to be. So it's like, you, yes, the outcome is great. Yes, it's phenomenal to be able to do this. But for me, it's like all the other things that got me to this point of what, for me, give me the most joy.
Now, are you letting yourself think a little bit about life after football and visualize on that or not yet?
Always, man.
I mean, the work that you've done with Whoop is a good example.
You know,
as an investor,
I will say, since I left for college, I've had to think that way, because I never knew if it was going to pan out. You know, coming from where I came from in Mahia, usually, you know, you had one or two options. You'll go work at Mahia State School, which is the state-supported living center for mentally challenged individuals, or you go work, you know, on a farm.
That was your career path.
Those were your career paths. You would develop some type of trade, you know, working on cars, welding, you know, running cattle. Those are the career paths. So for me, when I got to college, it was always, all right, I'm going to play football, but what else can I do? You know, all right, I got through the first year. All right, what type of degree or what type of career path do I see being as a possibility? And understanding I can always fall back on what I knew and what I grew up on, but at the same time, always putting something else, you know, kind of in the backlog just in case things didn't work out. And I know that may not be the way to describe it, but for me, that was that's kind of been my trajectory. When I got my undergraduate degree, I went and got a master's because I knew if football didn't work out, I wanted to make sure that I had something to fall back on. Yeah. And I mean, even now as a pro athlete, you hear that a lot in our circles, is make sure you get your degree, make sure you have something to fall back on if things don't work out, which, you know, the average career is like 2.6.
It's crazy, right?
It's only 2 years. If the average is 2.6, you know, what are you going to do when you're 26 years old and you're not playing football anymore? Like, you got to go do something.
Well, I mean, even if you have a brilliant career of 10 years, right?
True. You still
what are you going to do age 32?
Exactly.
I mean, it's not like you're old at 32.
Exactly.
Man.
Exactly. Yeah. So for me, it's been one of those things. I wanted to put things in place that, one, meet the passions that I have, allow me to travel and allow me to meet very interesting people. And that's what I've been able to do in tech. And you know,
Look, you're well on your way. You got Forbes 30 under 30. You checked that box. NFLPA Community MVP winner 2016-17-18. All-Stars of Giving Humanitarian of the Year Award finalist. Top 20 most tech-savvy athletes. You know, look at all these awards that are well outside of professional football. So congratulations, man.
Thank you. Thank you.
Where can people find you?
Twitter, Kelvin Beecham Jr., at Kelvin Beecham Jr. Same thing on Instagram. I love LinkedIn. Facebook, same thing. And then after being at the NBA Tech Summit today, I guess I need to make sure I get on TikTok. So
that's right. TikTok was a big theme today.
Huge theme today. So go check out TikTok. I'm not on Snap yet. I do have kids, but I am not ready to get on Snap yet.
Well, this has been a lot of fun, man. And congratulations on everything you've done so far in your career. And it's a pleasure for me to have you in my life.
Yes, sir. Always.
Thanks to Kelvin for coming on the Whoop podcast and for being a longtime supporter of Whoop. A reminder that you can get 15% off a Whoop membership when using the code WILLAHMED. That's WILLAHMED. You can follow us on social media at Whoop at WILLAHMED. We love to hear from you. Please subscribe to the podcast and give us all sorts of feedback. Stay tuned for lots of announcements coming soon. We at Whoop are wishing you a very green recovery week.